is about that. It's about gaining redemption from molten images, from emotional images, from and that's where she is. I mean, she's made it into an opera. All this, she's got the hots for somebody, but she's made it into an opera. Mm-hmm. And the idea of the fast of Tammuz is the beginning of the breaking down of all of the molten images, the emotional aspects of your life, so that you're not deceived by emotion any longer. Not deceived by religious emotion, not deceived by personal emotion, so that you see that you're here for a purpose, and that purpose is to fulfill something other than self. I know that's probably hard to hear, because you're convinced and you've been taught from childhood that you are supposed to be fulfilled. Your purpose in life is to be fulfilled. And you have all these little ambitions and dreams and images that you're going to complete and fulfill. And when that happens, you're going to be happy. The purpose of this fast is to show you that's a lie. It's the beginning, it's the breaking down of that wall, so that you can only be fulfilled when you're totally absorbed in the will of God, as opposed to your own will. Does that compute?
It's really.
There's no specific reference to the fast of Tammuz in the New Testament. In fact, the Jews today don't even celebrate it. It's an unknown feast, unknown fast. If you go to all the synagogues today, you won't see, they won't be doing anything.
Have they heard of it?
Sure. Go to Zechariah 4. Zechariah chapter 8. All you Bible scholars,
Rick's right there.
7:13.
Verse 16. These are the things that you shall do. Speak you every man the truth to his neighbor, and execute the judgment of truth and peace in your gates, and let none of you imagine evil in your hearts against his neighbor, and love no false oath. For all these are things that I hate, saith the Lord. And word of the Lord of hosts came unto me, saying, Thus saith the Lord of hosts, the fast of the fourth month, the fast of the fifth, the fast of the seventh, and the fast of the tenth shall be to the house of Judah joy and gladness, cheerful feasts. Therefore love the truth and peace. Now, those four fasts, the fast of the fourth month, the fast of the fifth, the fast of the seventh, and the fast of the tenth, are the fast of the fourth month is the fast of Tammuz. Fast of the fifth month is the fast of Ab. The fast of the seventh month, fast of Yom Kippur. The fast of the tenth month,
Passover.
Huh?
Passover.
Tabernacles.
Esther.
Ah.
Oh. The bride.
The bride.
The bride.
So we got Tammuz. The four fasts that are in Zechariah are Tammuz, Ab, Yom Kippur, and Esther. Now, there's, ask him to look in the Jewish encyclopedia. Ask him to look in any of their ancient documents. They'll see.
Ask him to ask their grandfather.
Now, the point of it is, this fast is a wimp fast, right? Only thing you couldn't do is eat.
Okay.
No coffee.
No TV.
No TV. No sex. No cigarettes. But the fast, the next one, the fast of Ab, is a really bad fast. Now, what do fasts show us?
How lucky we are every other day. So I always take it for granted that I can have a cup of coffee. That's the first thing I see.
It doesn't show how not focused we are on God. I mean, all of a sudden, when everything else is gone, you really focus on God.
The spiritual ones now, for the next 21 days, they fasted every day.
To sundown, and then you chow down.
Yeah, one meal a day at sunset, after the sun sets. Yeah.
You're really mature.
I
wish I could be going with you.
Yeah.
We'll be praying for you.
Just stay back with the women and children.
Andrea and I are going to do it. Faster. Harry and I.
Normally there's enough affliction during these 21 days.
Yeah.
Without you adding.
You don't have to bring any on yourself.
It dawned on me as I was driving this morning. We're gonna be between the straits. I went, wait, when did we get out of these straits?
My life.
Okay. The fast, the reason the fasts exist is because in the ancient times, the cities were walled for protection. And then in Jerusalem, there was a wall around the city of Jerusalem, and then in the center of the wall, or in the center of the city, was the temple. On the 17th day of the month of Tammuz, which is the fourth month, which is today, the fast of Tammuz, the enemies broke through the wall. Both at the time of when the Babylonians overcame it and when the Romans overcame it. And so, and both times, the enemy broke through the wall on this day. And once the enemy broke through the wall, by the law, the sacrifices in the temple had to cease. And both times, in 21 days, on the 9th of Ab, the Babylonians first and then the Romans broke through and defiled the holy place, the Holy of Holies. And so the period from the fast of Tammuz to the fast of Ab is the period, really, it's the destruction of the Jerusalem that now is. You understand that? And it happened in those days. I mean, the odds of it happening are about 1 billion to 1. But when Babylon came in and destroyed the temple, they did it. They broke through the wall on the 17th of Ab, and they got into the holy place on the 9th of Ab. I mean, the 17th of Tammuz and the holy place on the 9th of Ab. Same thing in the Romans. Now, the legend has it that they did it, that the final destruction in AD 135, when not one stone was left standing on top of one another, also happened on the 9th of Ab. So, now, the question is, what does this mean to you? And did Christ fulfill? What does this mean to you, and did Christ fulfill it? In order to understand these feasts and these fasts, you have to understand something basic, and that is that you are by nature spirit. You are by nature religious. It doesn't matter whether you say you believe, it doesn't matter what your words are, you pray 24 hours a day. Do you understand that? Your prayers are your thoughts. You pray even when you're asleep. You pray by your dreams. But your prayers are your thoughts 24 hours a day. The only problem is, and it's hard for you to understand this because you can't conceive of a situation in which it wouldn't exist, but you're praying to the wrong God. And you pray really rapidly. Your mind thinks at the rate of 1,300 words per minute. You speak at the rate of about 130 words per minute. So your mind thinks at approximately 10 times the rate that you speak. So when your prayers, your spoken prayers, are just minuscule compared to what your thought prayers are. And you're praying 24 hours a day. That's a huge lot. We're talking a whole lot of prayers. Now stop and think about who you've been praying to lately. You've been praying to the wrong God. Now that's all the process of discipleship is about, to cause you to pray to the right God. How do you do that? You do that by casting down the imaginations and every high place that exalts itself against the knowledge of God, and you bring into captivity every thought to the obedience of Christ. Well, how do you do that? You can only do it by one way, according to the scriptures. You do it by seeing the vanity of everything else. Now, it's fairly easy to see the vanity of stuff that's intellectual, of ideas and plans and things. But the thing that's most difficult to see the vanity of is the things that you worship that are have as an emotional base. You know, yesterday I came over to Tyra's and I got in the house and she'd been crying. She'd been crying for no reason.
No, I mean, I've been feeling depressed, you know, for days and just kind of ignoring it, but I mean, all of a sudden it was like...
But you have to see that that expression was an act of worship. The act of being depressed is an act of worship. The act of releasing the depression in terms of the crying is an act of obeisance. You're praying to somebody. You're praying to something. Do you understand that? Depression isn't a mental illness or a mental state. It's a spiritual state. Now, God has so constructed us so that we cannot ever be perfect. You know, we can never be in a state where we're not depressed. I mean, sometimes we're going to get depressed, some of us. But especially, this is true in the case of seeing the typology of a woman's menstrual cycle. Without exception, during the month, a woman goes through every possible emotion. Most women do. And part of it is they are depressed for absolutely no reason. They could have just won the Pulitzer Prize, just won the Oscar, just won something. They could have been on top of the world, had all the money in the world, be going with the best-looking guy in the universe, and still, because of the hormone cycle, they would be depressed at a certain time of the month. Why?
God
says
curse. It's a curse.
No, it's so that you can see that we're only the type. In other words, we can never get it right. And so you can also see that you don't have to give depression any importance. That's the biggest. Let's take fear. Fear is one of the great emotions. Fear and depression. Do you know that fear is the... From the standpoint of what happens internally in you, fear is the same thing that's there. Like just before you're going to do something really important, and your body gives you the extra energy and impulses and adrenaline into your system. But if it's something that you like, you don't call it fear; you call it excitement. If it's something that you don't like, you call it fear. But chemically, exactly the same things are happening. But if you call it fear, you dread it. And the dread produces more dread, and so you're locked in a cycle of fear. Do you understand what I'm saying?
Oh, yeah.
Never heard of it.
Huh?
I never heard that stuff saying.
So all you have to do is name it something different, and it will no longer be fear.
That's cool.
That is pretty cool.
I see that happen all the time in my classes about papers. So I get pumped about writing papers. And I watch everybody in the room the class go, oh, fuck, it's over. You know, and then they can't do research because it's burdensome and it's fearful and they think they're going to fail.
Oh, it's Gene. He does this every time we have a...
It's really cute. He doesn't have the long for 6 months.
He's got a calendar over there. He's got the fast long list.
No, he does. He does it in all. It's passive aggressive.
It's
but
so... It's so contented. At first I thought, there's no way he can time that, but after about 4 years...
every time we have a meeting where we have to meet during the day like this, then he always, this is the time he does his lawn cutting.
The cars, I'm sure.
But stop a minute and see. That's what we're talking about. We're talking about the things, mostly of what controls your life isn't, the things that control you are not the the things that you think about. You know, the things like your the things that you can control. The things that can control, the things that control your life are these things of how you feel, like this stupid, I'm in a position where I can't, I mean, I'm totally and completely nauseous right now. I'm the vertigo is so bad I can't hardly think, and I can't control it. There's nothing I can do about it. If Tara yesterday, she'd have done anything not to be able to be, not to be in that position of being depressed and feeling, and crying. What? The things that happen to us are the things that are at this emotional impact. They're, you know, you get in a bad mood. Well, why are you in a bad mood? What in the hell's a bad mood? What does that mean? Certain.
It's like you're right.
Yeah, Daryl.
Yeah, oh God. Cold shot. That's great.
I mean, what is a bad mood? Bad moods are stupid. But the point is, you don't have to give in to it. You don't have to worship it. I don't have to worship. I don't have to give in to pain. I don't have to give in to the stupid vertigo. And it has nothing to do with big courage or big anything like that. It has to do with simply seeing Christ. You're constructed to be a temple of worship where you bring every thought into captivity to the obedience of Christ. Now, this fast of Tammuz is the beginning of your ability to do that, so that you never have to be subject to the things that they are subject to. You don't fear the things they fear. You're not depressed by the things they're depressed about. You're not depressed about anything. Depression is stupid. Depression is the act or state of being in which there is no hope. You never have to fear. Fear is transformed to anticipation. Depression is transformed to hope. You're never subject to the same things that the world is subject to. And you can no longer give in to them. Now, that's what this feast is about. That's what this fast is about. And in knowledge, the fast is turned, as we just read in Zechariah, to joy. A day of gladness, a feast. Because in spite of being in a position where you're depriving yourself of something, so there's not instant gratification all the time, you can find yourself to be in a state of joy and understanding and peace. And we're going to find out by the readings that let's get there. Go to Galatians 4.
I know you're not saying that you never go to a doctor.
No.
So, I mean, but that's what you're kind of saying. I mean, like in person, I mean, depression is a mental illness.
But you don't have to give in to it.
Yeah, I hear that, but, I mean, sometimes things like that need to be treated.
Look. Nothing that we do about the flesh will ever work. We're only talking about being in it because it's not meant to. We're only talking about being in a state where you're not, where you're casting down the imaginations and the high places that exalt themselves against the knowledge of God. And one of the things that exalt themselves against the knowledge of God is depression. Can you hear that?
Yeah.
You don't have to stay in that state of depression. You don't have to stay in that stinky part of town.
You've been living there.
No, I'm just kidding. I've been hearing too much tilting.
That doesn't mean that you might not go so far into it that a technician has to do something to get you out of it. Or that doesn't mean that. There's no relationship between
freedom says you don't have to worship it. Sometimes you may. You can't get it right. We're talking about the renewal of the mind, not the renewal of the circumstance. Be transfigured by the renewing of your mind. Do not conform to the world. Okay? Everybody understand?
Sin is going outside of that at any point for sustenance.
Yeah, and you go, you do. It's, you go outside of it, but, you know, you'll come back. That's the point.
Yeah, the reason I'm saying that is because what's going on inside me is like, when I couldn't deal with depression, when I couldn't deal with things, I wanted to go take drugs, you know? And the same thing has gone on with women, as we've talked about, you know, relationships. And I want to go out because I can't deal with the emptiness that happens inside of me. I want to go outside that. And I want to deal with that.
Okay. Do you understand that from a spiritual standpoint, if everybody is spiritual and all the things that you're doing are, you're either worshiping or you're praying, you know, as we said, what you worship is what you give importance to. The word worship literally means to give breath to. So you worship something, you have to give it breath. You have to give it life. You understand that? Like, there's nothing that can be sustained if you don't give it life outside of yourself. That's the way you are. You can't sustain a job, you can't sustain a relationship, you can't sustain imagery, you can't sustain politics, you can't sustain patriotism, anything, unless you keep pumping it up. You have to give it life, because it doesn't have a life of its own. That's why all of the value systems, of all the value systems, hey, huh?
That may be why we live in so much stress.
Yeah, because the stress is this competing, you're trying to give different things importance. So again, to worship means you give it breath, you give it importance. And the question is, what are you worshiping? What things are you worshiping? Well, the fast of Tammuz is the beginning of the destruction of the things that you worship. Now that's why it's not studied. Do you understand? That's why nobody is doing what we're doing in the world. Because everybody takes into something and brings in a whole raft of stuff that they think is important, that they give breath to. Now, we are a people who give breath to no thing except the living God, hopefully. So, for us, you have to be ready to say, I am giving up anything that I am giving importance to by the beginning to the celebration of this fast. Now, so I'm no longer going to worship the wrong gods or the wrong things. I'm no longer going to pray to the wrong to stupid gods. And I'm no longer going to tithe to the wrong images, to the wrong gods. That's really what this is about. It's about tithing, worshiping, and praying. That's what, and it's about where you go for instruction, where you go for law, where you go for what to do. Jerusalem, that now is the Jerusalem, everybody has a Jerusalem. It's where you go if you think you're in trouble, where you go for the what to do's. What do I do about this? You understand that? That's what the Jerusalem that now is. It's where you go for that, those kinds of rules. And if you go someplace for rules, you're going someplace for bondage. You understand that? So it's about, again, this fast is about the beginning of the destruction of where you go for rules, where you worship, where you tithe, and where you give importance to things. Now let's see if we can understand that, what Paul says. Go to Galatians 4. And any time you want to go someplace for a rule, or a rule is simply, what do I do? What shall I do about this? It doesn't matter what it, you understand? You can be, whatever God puts upon you, if you want to go someplace to say, what do I do about this? You want to go to Jerusalem. You want to go to bondage. Capisce? And you don't want to be free. Because free says, I have to trust. Free says, I have no idea what's going to happen next. Rules, Jerusalem always says, where do I go? What do I do about this in order to get that? You understand that? You have an end result, an end objective in view. Therefore, it's a Jerusalem after the flesh, and what you do is you go someplace to get to say, what do I? How do I get that? In other words, and you will never be able to leave the Jerusalem that now is until you're done with trying to get that. Is this communicating to you at all?
Mm-hmm.
All right. Now, if you want to go and have a rule, if you want to go someplace and say, what do I do? How do I get that? What do I do to get that? Then you desire to be under the law. Now, so Paul is saying in verse 21, well, at verse 20, he says, I desire to be present with you now and to change my voice, for I stand in doubt of you. He's just said, my little children, of whom I travail in birth again until Christ be formed in you. Now he says, tell me, you that desire to be under the law, do you not hear the law? That's why to be a believer, to be part of what we're about, you have to have at least the desire to say that everything in the universe is vanity, that all things are vain, all things are fruitless. Because otherwise you will come in here and say, what do I do to get that? And you've got an image, what do I do to get that? What do I do to get that? And some of the images are things, are relationships, the most difficult ones to deal with are the ones that have some emotional content. Like, what do I do to get justice? You understand? Or what do I do to get, what were yours?
Dignity.
Respect.
Romance.
What do I do to get these things? Because those things, I mean, what do I do to get them? What do I do to get them? Well, the first thing you have to do to get them is you have to find out, my God, I don't really want them. Because to want them is to be under the law. Now tell me, you that desire to be under the law, tell me. Now, again, this one, let's pick on him. Ever since I've known him, he's wanted to know, and what, Ed, which too bad, one, Ed. Ed need to be here. This one.
Rick.
Rickster.
But Ed and Rick, they're partners in this, they're Ed Rick, but both of them desire to be under the law more than anybody I've ever met. Ed is always, well, what do I think about this, Ole? Or what do we believe about that? Rick is always, what will I do here?
Which rock can rest on me?
He goes and gets all this information from everywhere.
Yeah.
He's the great conduit.
Well, anyway, the point of it is, it was the desire to be under the law. Now, the marriage, nothing's wrong with marriage. Marriage is wonderful. But if the belief system is that I need to be married in order to be fulfilled, then I desire to be under the law. And God has to become your enemy. You don't want God as your enemy. And God will kill your dog. He will ruin your relationship. He'll cause your girlfriend to get hots for somebody else to cause you to no longer be under the law. Is that clear? Now, tell me, you that desire to be under the law, do you not hear the law? Okay? Now, we're going to read another thing later. Hopefully, we're going to read Bel and the Dragon, which is one of the readings for this feast. But there we're going to find out we don't want to be under cause and effect. We don't want to be the ones that make the vow. I'm going to make $1,000 vow of faith so I can get what I want. Well, that's just the whore of Babylon. It has nothing to do with the true God. You know, fortunately, Hendrina was delivered from the whore. Harry was delivered from the whore. But so are all the rest of us. They were just so obvious. I mean, the reason that Tilton exists is to make your whore be seen. Okay? Now, so we're dealing now, though, with you that desire to be under the law. Tell me, you that desire to be under the law, do you not hear the law? For it is written that Abraham had two sons, the one by a bondmaid, the other by a free woman. But he who was of the bondwoman was born after the flesh, but he of the free woman was by promise. Now, which things are an allegory? For these are the two covenants, the one from the Mount Sinai, which gendereth to bondage, which is Hagar. And for this Hagar is Mount Sinai in Arabia, and answereth to Jerusalem, which now is, as in bondage, and is in bondage with her children. The same exact thing. If you have an idea that's after the flesh, one is the bondwoman. The bondwoman is it's the idea that was born after the flesh. Hear me. You are automatically desiring to be under the law. Can you hear that? Now, but Jerusalem, which is above, is free, which is the true mother of us all. For it is written, rejoice thou that bearest, thou barren that bearest not, break forth and cry, thou that travailest not, for the desolate has many more children than she which hath a husband. Now we, brethren, as Isaac was, are the children of promise. But as then he that was born after the flesh persecuted him that was born after the spirit, even so it is now. Don't you understand that's what takes place in you? It's this idea, everything. You got everything in you is persecuting the seed of Christ in you. I've got this idea. I've got this depression. I've got this thing. I've got this. I've got that. I've got this. I've got that. Everything to keep that seed, that thing, that wonderful seed of God that was born after the promise from being fulfilled. And that, a persecution is happening 24 hours a day. The question is, are you going to give in to it?
Now, what makes you want to be under the law?
The Antichrist. It's the way you're built.
I mean, do you think it's going to be easier?
Well, it has many subtleties. Your reasons for wanting to be under the law are the counterfeit of your office in the body. So there's not just one. There's many, many reasons for wanting to be under the law. Mostly, it's a false sense of peace.
Here's a list of what you do.
And control.
You feel peace.
Like you can make something happen.
Right.
Yeah, the illusion that you have a choice.
The illusion of control and the illusion of choices.
There's the
spell.
But
so
basically,
it's not like you consciously say, I want to be under the law.
No,
you're
that
law.
No,
it's
you,
like a given.
You say, I want to be, I want to do this so I can have this sense of peace without any conflict. And you believe that peace is this thing where everything is going reasonably well.
Yeah.
On the surface.
All the courses, yeah.
See, the spiritual man is at peace. It doesn't matter what the external circumstances are. The whore requires the circumstances to be right for there to be peace. Understand?
It's interesting what that rock singer said last night. Do you remember hearing him, the guy that he's not using all the new technology for his,
for
his songs? And the one thing that he had discovered was that you had to just learn to be happy wherever you were, no matter what the circumstances were, you know, in that moment.
And he felt that for him, the music, any electronic amplification or the electronic brought you away from that moment of peace.
But it was really interesting to hear.
you still think you, there's a law that you gotta do it right.
You gotta get it right. You gotta do it right. You gotta. But the laws, the word for the law, the Ten Commandments or the 613 laws, that's what God says is necessary for you to please Him.
Some laws you care about, some laws you don't.
Right. I can care about it now because I'm starting to see the meaning of it. But before then, I could never. There's a whole raft of laws in here. A whole bunch of those 613 laws are about the ashes of a red heifer. Right? It doesn't really grab me unless I, you know.
Who cares about that cow?
Yeah.
That's right.
Right? But from God's standpoint, those are vital. So most what that means is what we do is we take even the spiritual law and we make it as an instrument of self. You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah.
If it doesn't grab me, it doesn't mean anything.
To me.
So what that shows us is that what we think is law is simply the way a thing works. We want things to work. And so whatever we think is law is what we think is necessary for something to work. And the work that we're talking about here is the idea of having peace. What does it take for me to have peace? What does it take for me to have my needs met? You know, all this religious stuff would go right out the window if you were hungry enough.
Yeah.
Right?
Or cold enough.
Or cold enough.
Or ingredients, try air.
No.
No,
try
it. Remember that scene from The Razor's Edge when he's gone up to the mountain to find out the meaning of life there in Tibet, and the snow falls off the roof of the cabin and it dumps onto his fire. And he just pauses for a second and he takes the prayer book and he starts ripping pages out and burns the prayer book to start the fire.
Well, but then again, the real big one is start to drown. And you will subconsciously... Even the most spiritual among us, the most highly developed spiritual being there is, when that person is without air, will try to pull you down in order for him to get oxygen. I mean, it's...
That's the way it works.
It's
with a one-celled atom.
Yeah, and it's the reason is because everything in the universe is against the revelation of Christ. And that's why we are in a state of antagonism. We're supposed to be. We think it not strange concerning the fiery trial. We think it not strange that, you know, if you think it's strange that there is antagonism, then you will do all kinds of weird stuff. You'll believe a false gospel. The evidence that you believe a false gospel is that you think suffering is strange. No. Let me make sure you all understand the basis of the Fast of Tammuz. On the Fast of Tammuz, the wall is broken. The wall of Jerusalem. So, what that means internally in you is at least you, during the Fast of Tammuz, you accept the possibility that anything that you're giving importance to, anything you're thinking about, may be a molten image and may be wrong. You understand that? So that's what means the wall is broken. Is there anything that you, any value system that you have that still you think is important, then the fast hasn't done its work. Now, 21 days later, what happens is that the altar is totally destroyed. Now, that's when that period is the idea of that particular idol is totally gone. Is when its altar is destroyed, because an idol has to have an altar to sit on. If you destroy the altar, the idol can't stand. Now that's why we study Bel and the dragon in a minute. Bel is the name of the chief god of Babylon. It's the God of cause and effect. And it's a solid gold, 60 cubit high, 6 cubit wide idol. A cubit is 25 inches, so that's a huge, we're talking huge solid gold object. Structurally, it cannot stand. It's too tall for its width, so it won't stand. Therefore, what has to happen, and what they had to do, is they had to take the gold out of the temple in Jerusalem, and the artifices, the artifices out of the temple, and from that, they made the base for the cause and effect, God Bel, to stand. If you take those things that belong in the temple of God and put them in their proper order, internally in you, then the God of cause and effect will fall. You don't have to worry about it. Now, that's why it's so important to know the meaning of the golden candlestick, to know the meaning of the Ark of the Covenant, to know the meaning of the table of showbread, to know the meaning of the laver, to know the meaning of the brazen altar, because these are the things upon which the stupid idol is sitting. And if you put them in their proper places by understanding, then all of the false idols fall automatically. You never have to preach what to do. You should do. You should do that. That's just, then we'll just make this place another Jerusalem that now is. Now, some of you love to make this a Jerusalem. You always, what do I do about this? What do I do about that? Is everybody understanding a little bit? Okay. Let's go all of the readings are about molten images for the Fast of Tammuz.
Molten
images are the emotions. The readings are all about the molten images. You're supposed to read and understand the golden calf in the wilderness that was built. You're supposed to read about the calves that were set up in the northern kingdom in the temple. You're supposed to read about the abomination of desolation that was set up in the temple in the book of Daniel. Now, hopefully fasting, by the grace of God, will cause you to see those idols in you. They might be destroyed. Now, the pious fasted during the day for all 21 days, and Ed has told me that he's planning on doing that. Fasting will cause you to see the abomination of making the idols in you. Now, you've made them. You've got to understand, you've made these emotional idols. You've made your own depression. You've made your own fear. You've made them. You've created them from a child. And you've made them in order to give your meaningless life meaning. It's better to feel something than nothing. Now, there are times in your life when, you would cut yourself to make sure you were alive. You understand me? Now, at the times when you were going through these emotional crises, that's when the molten images were formed. They were formed in the fire of those emotions. Now, that's what we got to... Now, what happens, the common denominator of all the molten images is they cause you to see yourself in time, and they prevent you from seeing yourself in eternity. And once you see yourself in time, then things in time can affect you. But if you see yourself as hid with Christ in the heavenlies, nothing in time can affect you.
Is that being able to see yourself in time, is that why they're created? Because it's so scary to not see yourself in time?
Right. That's why I'm saying, just stop and think. If you really think about yourself, right? There's 5 billion people on the planet today. Each of those 5 billion people were created in a climax or an orgasm of every one of that. The orgasm that created you had 150 million other sperm cells in it. You're an accident. You're a chemical accident. You can't think about it.
You can't think of, otherwise, my God, I'm trying to do all these things and I'm trying to make my life meaningful, and but I'm not, how can I make my life meaningful if I'm not meaningful at the core? I'm just a joke. I'm a joke, a cosmic joke of nature. Oh, but God loves you. Well, if he loves me so much, what's he doing about the 35 million people that are starving to death in a famine in Africa? Does he love me more? That doesn't make sense. That's not a just God. Oh, God loves you and he has a wonderful plan for your life. Well, what about all the babies that are dying in sudden infant death syndrome? Do you understand? If you as a logical, normal, understanding person really think, well, that's Satan that causes them to do that. Well, then Satan is stronger than God. Your theology is really flawed. You understand me? You've either got to come to the understanding that something totally different than you is taking place in time and space, or you've got to come to understanding that you will cut yourself in order to have meaning in your meaningless life. You will be depressed in order to have to think that you exist. And you'll invent some belief system and then run around and cause others to believe it so that you can be sure that it must be true because I'm causing these other people to believe it. Are you getting that sort of a sick feeling?
Yeah.
Yeah, but I had that before.
Yeah.
The period of between fast of Tammuz and the fast of Av, these 21 days, are called being between the straits. You're between the rock and the hard place. There's no hope. During these next 21 days, I want you to so thoroughly look at yourself to see the vanity of self that there is no thing that you think is important that can withstand these next 21 days. That's what this is about. So that you really stop and think about the stuff of time and space and futility. I mean, really analyze it. Get real depressed. Get real. Don't stop your mind when you think, oh, I can't think about that. Oh, I can't think about that. Mm-hmm. How many I can't think about that's do you have in your mind, in your life? Why are you there?
I can't think about that.
Billions and billions.
Yeah, I can't think about that. I can't think about all that. That's
okay, you remember all those questions you asked when you were a little kid?
Yeah, I can't think about that.
And you found out there weren't any answers? You're right, there aren't any answers. What you've done is you've accepted, you've entered into an alliance, a conspiracy of language, a conspiracy of stupidity with other stupid idiots, to make a meaningless life meaningful.
Yeah.
Now, the things that actually took place, these traditional events in the fast of Tammuz, were done by the enemies of Israel. You got to see this. But they were used by God to destroy the vanity. So, okay, here's what was done. Nebuchadnezzar broke through the walls on the 17th of Tammuz, and 21 days later the temple was destroyed in the fast of Av. In 70 A.D., Titus broke through the wall on the 17th of Tammuz, and 21 days later, the temple was destroyed in the fast of Av. Moses broke the tablets of the law when he saw the golden calf on the 17th of Tammuz. The offering ceased in the first temple when the wall was breached. In the Bar Kokhba rebellion in 132, this destroyed the possibility of Judaism ever being again. The biggest thing that happened is a Roman legion named Apatmos. He wrapped a rabbi in the scroll of the law, set him on the altar, and set him on fire to show the ridiculousness of their. Okay, if God's not good, here's the things that are most important to you, Jews. And again, they didn't understand. They'd missed the point. The type had lost its purpose once the perfect had come. So when Christ had come, the temple had no more value. So in 70 AD, a Roman named Apatmos wrapped a rabbi in the scrolls of the law, set him on the temple, on the altar, and set him on fire. And said, okay, and literally said, okay, God, if your God is so important, and this is so important to you, now let him take care of you. You understand? Now, again, it was no longer important because that which it revealed had come. It was dead to the eyes of God. Just as the human race is dead to the eyes of God. If you could only see that, your stupidity would lessen.
That's comforting.
Way forward, isn't it?
What?
I'm less stupid.
So they have to say, I'm less stupid.
Yeah. I don't feel necessarily smarter. I feel less.
I'm okay, you're less stupid. Yeah.
Not Anthony, what a diplomat.
Joke. It was sell millions of books. I'm okay, you're less stupid.
New home video course, that'd be less.
Yeah, listening to your stupidity day by day.
Just for your benefit, we'll go to Ezekiel 13 now.
Oh,
every day, in every way.
You're going to be less
stupid.
I shouldn't have
done that.
It's going to live on and on.
Here you're still going to be fun.
John, you're coming to
13?
Ezekiel 13. This is pretty dumb thing. This is pretty dumb stuff to say. It's just sort of.
Well, just that last one.
The last one.
Just that.
And the word of the Lord came unto me, saying, Son of man, prophesy against the prophets of Israel that prophesy, and say thou unto them that prophesy out of their own hearts, Hear you the word of the Lord. Now again, prophets of Israel. Who's he talking about? He's talking about this was back here in 600 BC, and he's talking about them back. No. Well, who's the prophet of Israel? Anyone that it tells you what to do is a prophet of Israel. Do you understand that?
You mean anyone?
Anyone.
Your parents.
Your parents, your boss. Anyone that tells you what to do is a prophet of Israel. That's why I prayerfully will never tell you what to do, but I'll tell you who you are. And in that knowing who you are, you can abandon yourself to his faith. But if I tell you what to do, then I have become a prophet of Israel, and I am telling you the law, and because you desire to be under the law. Do you understand that? So this I mean, you don't have to call yourself a prophet to be a prophet. All right. Thus saith the Lord God, Woe unto the foolish prophets that follow their own spirit and have seen nothing. O Israel, thy prophets are like the foxes in the desert. You have not gone up into the gaps, neither made the hedge for the house of Israel to stand in the battle in the day of the Lord. They have seen vanity and lying divination, saying, The Lord saith, and the Lord hath not sent them, and they have made others to hope that they would confirm the word. Have you not seen? You know what happened? Let me just tell you a story. Mr. Tilton sued us, right? And he sued us. One of the reasons he sued us is because he sued us for libel and slander. And so under the laws of libel and slander in the discovery process, we asked for the names and addresses of all the people that he had claimed to have healed in the last 2 years. He got so nervous, and the judge approved it. He got so nervous when he got that he limited the motion, and he says, "All right, guys, just if you have called Mr. Tilton a charlatan, we'll accept that.
It's okay.
It's okay because that's an expression of your religious belief, and we will just exclude all of that, and you." We're not calling you that. We're not saying that you committed libel and slander when you called him a charlatan, because that's an expression of your religion. And so, therefore, we don't have to give you the names of all the people that Brother Bob has healed.
Really? Unbelievable.
What a maneuver.
Unbelievable. The lawyers went berserk when they read that.
Oh, that's great.
He goes on and on for pages and pages about how all we have done is express our religious belief by calling him a slime and a maggot and a thief
and a charlatan.
And he has no problem with that. The only thing he had a problem with was misstating the value and ownership of the house in California.
It's just the stuff in Primetime Live.
You know, I thought it's open this thing about
all okay.
Unto them that prophesy out of their own hearts. He's the clearest.
Yeah, he is a prophet.
He's the clearest vision of that, you know, because he, like, kind of fakes the gifts of the Spirit, and he'll say, "Thus saith the Lord," and then, you know, basically give the rap about the book and things, you know.
Okay.
But it's always out of his own stuff.
But again, it's the same thing. He's just there so you can see clearly the others that do it. Everybody, we all do it. They have seen vanity and lying divination, saying, "The Lord saith," and the Lord hath not sent them. They have made others to hope that they would confirm the word. Now, see, when you go to somebody and say, "This is what you should do, and then this will happen," you understand what you're doing? Have you not seen a vain vision, and have you not spoken a lying divination, whereas you say, "The Lord saith," albeit I have not spoken? Therefore, thus saith the Lord God, because you have spoken vanity and seen lies, therefore, behold, I am against you, saith the Lord God. Mine hand shall be upon the prophets that see vanity and that divine lies. They shall not be in the assembly of my people, neither shall they be written of in the writing of the house of Israel, neither shall they enter into the land of Israel, and you shall know that I am the Lord God. You know what a prophet had to do in Israel to be in this book? First of all, in order to be called a prophet in Israel, you had to prophesy things that would happen that would shortly come to pass. And then, of course, you made these long-range sort of eternal prophecies. But you had to prophesy things that would come to pass within a few years or a few months. And if they did not come to pass exactly, word down to the jot and tittle, exactly as you had said, then you were killed. Your family was killed, any relative of yours was killed, no matter how distant. All of your writings were destroyed and burned, and your existence was removed from the record of Israel.
Didn't your scribe get dusted too?
Oh, yeah. Well, now, this is the next one. Because they have seduced my people, saying peace, and there was no peace. And one built up a wall, and no others daubed it with untempered mortar. Say unto them which daub it with untempered mortar that it shall fall. There shall be an overflowing shower, and yea, O great hailstone shall fall, and a stormy wind shall rend it. Lo, and when the wall is fallen, shall it not be said unto you, "Where is the daubing wherewith you have daubed it?" Therefore thus saith the Lord God, I will rend it with a stormy wind in my fury, and there shall be an overflowing shower in mine anger, and great hailstones in my fury to consume it. Now the wall is what we're talking about. You understand? The wall is what was destroyed on the fast of Tammuz. Now, what is the wall that you have tempered with, that you have daubed with untempered mortar? What are the walls that you have daubed with untempered mortar? You understand? What are your walls that you have tempered? Do you understand how almost all of your belief system is based on myth? All political systems are based on myth. All of your belief systems, all of your religion, all of your value systems are based on myth. Let me give you a prime example of a myth. In geopolitics, the accepted logic for the last 50 years is that the nuclear power of the United States and Russia is what that balance between the power is what kept there to be peace in Europe or in the world, fundamentally in the world, right? I mean, it's the stated, accepted belief system. And it's just one of a thousand different myths in politics. But I'm 54 years old, And I could say that this thing right here is what, the fact that this exists is what kept there would be peace in Europe. You understand? And it's equally, this is ludicrous because it's, you know, I just bought it a few days ago. But if it was a rock or something in my pocket. Now, the same thing is true in you. What is your myth about, let's assume, one of the myths that's growing up, and I'm not saying they're bad, I'm just saying it's a myth, that if I eat right, and if I take the right vitamins, then I'll be healthy. I won't get sick. But by the same token, I can say the fact that I have this key in my pocket is what's kept me from being sick. Both of them are myths.
Yeah, because we put science almost in a God position, whatever it says.
Yeah. They're myths. Okay. All right. The same is true now of what are the walls. The walls that you have in your life are your myths. What are they? What walls have broken and there's cracks in them, but you quickly tempered them more. You put untempered mortar in them to make the walls more secure. What are the walls around your Jerusalem? What's protecting you? What are the myths that are protecting?
Things get better tomorrow. There's hope in the future.
The thing that comes to my mind is I was talking to my mother last week and I was telling her what had gone on with Liz, and she looked at me and she said, well, I just hope someday you can get married and be happy. And I realized, my God, I've heard that all my life, and from her and from, you know, in that whole deal, and it was just, it overwhelmed me when she said that.
Right, and you know that your mother and your father are the example of two of the most unhappy people I've ever met in my life.
Oh, I know. I mean, it's crazy.
Okay, what else? Give me another wall that's keeping you.
I don't really know how to, but this deal about not being able to see what's there. I mean, so afraid that
it's a good
I'm
going
to be abandoned because of it.
That's a good one. The failure to prophesy, the failure to say what's there, because, I mean, that's the same kind of thing. That's a wall that you keep tempering, even though here, it's preached to only say what's there.
Yeah.
Okay, give me some more walls.
I know I have a huge one about work, about needing to finish undergraduate, go to graduate, so that I can have work that's like above being a total drone.
Okay, the that's a great one. One of the greatest walls there is the nobility of labor.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What you do.
That what you do is what's going to ennoble you, or keep you from being
bored to death.
Yeah.
It's like the work.
Well, or you know, if you worked as a secretary like I do, it means the hierarchy. You always feel like I'm better than they are. Or, you know, it's like here I am down here.
Yeah, but it's always a wall that keeps you from recognizing your own essentially. How lucky you are even just to be breathing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So what are some of the other walls?
A companion. I mean,
the walls that are the definition that define you by relationships. Mm. That's what's happening with this one. But again, every one of us have these walls that keep us from looking into what's happening inside the temple to see that that's failure. You know, I can't imagine that I would ever leave Tyra, or she would ever leave me, in fact. But still yet for Tyra, a wall here is that marriage is something that defines something. Maybe the wall for me is marriage doesn't define. But whatever it is, it's a wall that keeps from looking clearly. You understand? With Gary, Gary's convinced if he could just get his truck fixed, then everything would be fine.
I was proud of you. I didn't see any dents in it.
Okay, now let's so we're talking about a celebration of the breaking down of the walls. It doesn't seem very smart. Well, that's why this feast isn't celebrated.
Yeah.
Okay? Therefore, thus saith the Lord God, I will even rend it with a stormy wind in my fury. Now, well, isn't it a lot more fun just to let the wall fall down by itself instead of trying to, I mean, you don't want to have the stormy wind of God's fury coming at you. I mean, that's, right? Why don't you just let the damn wall fall down? It'll fall, I promise you, when you stop, if you could only see what your wall looked like. I mean, you huh?
No dobbing here.
Dob knot.
Right, but it's also got all these, it's got little pieces of stuff, like it's got twigs and an old spoke of a bicycle and something that, yeah, but it's got stuff that's holding it up. See, I mean, the wall is falling in, and you've got this stuff that's all
propped up.
You've got props. Like, plus, you've got pages of articles, and you've got dead animals, and I mean, you've got 60 jillion things there just holding this stupid wall up. Because you're convinced if the...
Right.
25th anniversary
issue. I didn't see that one.
Okay.
I didn't see that one.
If I, you know...
Well, yeah, that's a good one.
What?
25th anniversary issue. But
what's that mean?
It's a 20-year-old
man. That's in Harry's wall.
But it's in my wall.
With Harry's got pictures of himself, naked pictures of himself on the wall.
See, Harry?
You know. I want to know.
Just think if God had done it a little differently, made me the rabbi and him the booth.
But he didn't. You wish for him. But he didn't.
That's right.
Maybe the next.
Maybe
part.
That's in your wall.
Maybe shake the red wall.
Harry has
a that wall.
Harry's wall is.
Wave the red flag.
Your hat gets a little heavy.
So will I break down the wall that you have daubed with untempered mortar, and bring it down to the ground, so that the foundation thereof shall be discovered, and it shall fall, and you shall be consumed in the midst thereof, and you shall know that I am the Lord. Thus will I accomplish my wrath upon the wall, and upon them that have daubed it with untempered mortar, and will say unto you, there is no more, neither they that daubed it. To wit, the prophets of Israel, which prophesy concerning Jerusalem, and which see visions of peace for her, and there is no peace, saith the Lord God. Now, let's go to Ezekiel. No, let's not. We don't have time. Let's go to Exodus 32, I think. Are you getting, do you understand a little bit about the feast?
Yeah.
Now, in some parts of Judaism, they at least give a little acknowledgement to this. But in Reform Judaism and Conservative Judaism, they don't even know that the Fast of Tammuz exists. Just like in Christianity, they don't. Because do you understand that Christianity and Judaism are really the same? They're synagogue Judaism, and synagogue Judaism is illegal. Can you hear that?
No.
Synagogue Judaism... Christianity and Judaism today are both waiting for Messiah to come. You understand that? Mm-hmm.
I get that.
Jesus is coming.
Now, they're both exactly the same. They're people who name the name of God, believe in God. Both of them believe that they're waiting for Messiah to come to be fulfilled. They're exactly the same. But they're both illegal because... Synagogue Judaism is illegal because it has to have a temple. If there's no sacrifice, there's no temple. And Christianity says, well, there was a sacrifice sometime, but it doesn't really affect me now, and I've got to live the best way I can, and then someday some... They're both synagogue Judaism. They both deny the finishedness of Messiah, of Yeshua. They both say something is lacking. That's why they cannot... You can't understand the Fast of Tammuz until you understand it's finished. And otherwise, it would expose the ridiculousness of your own religion.
And you're just speaking at the present moment in the life. You're not speaking about the second coming of Christ.
What do you mean?
Well, I mean that you're saying that they feel that something has to...
They feel like something has to happen.
The Christians are waiting for Christ
Messiah
to return a second time, a second coming of Christ.
Well, the Christians are waiting for Messiah, and the Jews are waiting for Messiah.
It's
a new
deal.
Yeah, I understand what you're saying.
What are you...
That you're saying that they're waiting for Christ's return,
So that they're fulfilled. You're talking about the very...
Forget, don't add anything to it. Don't add anything to it, to your sentence or to your mind. The Jews are waiting for Messiah. Christians are waiting for Messiah. They're both exactly the same.
Is
that what your question?
Well, because I know that the Christians are waiting for the second coming.
Well,
you're
so,
not saying that.
Well, so what are you going to do when the great one of the rabbis from Jerusalem says, "Okay, that's no problem. When he comes, you'll ask him if he was here before." Do you understand? Stop and think about the stupidity of the question. When Messiah is come, Messiah means the hope of the nations, the fulfillment of everything, the dream, the completion of all things. That's what the word Messiah means.
Right.
So how can it, the second coming, what does that mean? That's a religious term that was invented in the 1830s. It's a term to explain their own apostasy. You never heard Paul they knew that when he appeared it was finished. And when he catches up some of the clouds, it's only that time in which our minds agree with that which is finished eternally. There's no second coming. The second coming is the end of time.
Because it also implies judgment is delayed, too. I mean, it's not just Christ comes and we have a great time, but it's all those bad people out there, you know, thrown into hell or whatever. I mean, but that allows you to live in gray because you say, well, judgment isn't yet. Judgment's over there, and so I can continue and do all this stuff. And, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, whether you know judgment is now, then...
You've got to see that this is the end. It's now. It's done. It's finished. Now. He has come. He is come. Hereby know ye the spirit of truth and the spirit of error. Every spirit that confesses that Jesus Christ is come in the flesh is of God. And every spirit that confesseth not that Jesus Christ is come in the flesh is not of God, but is of that Antichrist. Is come. It's got to be seen. It's got to be that clear. I'm not trying to pick on you, but I'm trying to make you see it's black or white. It isn't some gray. This isn't another philosophy. It's either finished or it isn't. Everything that says it isn't finished is all the same. Doesn't matter whether they call themselves. If they say it's not finished, then they have denied the Holy One of Israel.